Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. It's not too early to start planning your summer experience at Pardes, and over the next couple of weeks I'll be talking about the different programs that are available to you. The first one to mention is the Pardes Executive Learning Seminar, and this year we'll be learning the lives, loves, and legacy of King David. The Executive Learning Seminar is aimed at adults in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and up, and is happening this year from June 29th through July 3rd in Jerusalem. The program is described further on the website, and I hope that you can make plans to attend. This week, Rabbi David Levenkreus discusses Parshat Tetzaveh. Rabbi David Levenkreus is a senior faculty member of Pardes and is also the director of summer programs for Pardes. And now, Rabbi David Levenkreus.
Thank you, Larry. It's very big pleasure to be doing a Parshat HaShavua podcast again. I remember when I was in university studying contemporary Jewry, in our introduction to contemporary Jewry, the lecturer told us to imagine that somebody had come from Mars and had landed in a Jewish community and was asking all different questions about what does it mean to be a Jew. Well, are you a religion? Or are you a people? Or are you an ethnic group? I don't understand, but if you're a religion, how can people belong to you who have absolutely nothing to do with the religion? But if you're a nation, why is it that you have to belong to that particular religion to be, I'm getting mixed up, says the poor Martian. The Jewish person explaining the Jewish community is getting mixed up too, and finally in exasperation says, oh, I just wish you'd come 300 years ago. Things would have been much, much easier. Then everybody knew exactly what it meant to be a Jew. People had clarity. It was everything that we're talking about mixed together in a very, very powerful and indelibly connected way, something that's very, very hard for us to understand that day. And certainly, this is the way that most people think about many Jewish issues, especially the issue of Jewish identity, that today these are issues for us, that today what it means to be a Jew has become complicated by the Enlightenment, but that in pre-Enlightenment times, before Jews were allowed out of the ghetto, there was clarity as to what was happening. Today we're going to look at Parshat Tetzaveh, which deals with the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, and really ask ourselves, by examining an aspect of the Kohen Gadol's clothing, I know this sounds strange, but by examining an aspect of the Kohen Gadol's clothing, we're going to try and examine what did Jewish identity mean for Jews throughout the ages, and what does it mean for us today? Not too bad to be learnt from a few details about his garments. In Shmot 28:21, which is the first source on your source sheet, we read about the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, which contained 12 semi-precious stones. And the Torah writes, Va'avanim tiyena al shmot bnei Yisrael, shtem Yisrael shmotam, pituche chotam ish al shmo, tiyena lishnei asar shevet. The stone shall contain the name of the 12 sons of Israel, one for each of the 12 stones. In other words, on the breastplate, all of the 12 sons of Jacob had their names written. In a very, very powerful way, this insignia of office symbolizes the role of the high priest as representing the entire community and personifying its historic ideals. In other words, on his heart, the Kohen Gadol was wearing the people of Israel and the religion of Israel. But the question is, in what order were the names written? Who did we write first? Who did we write next? And by examining different rabbinic understandings of this question, we will try to understand what Jewish identity meant for them and for us. I think for most people, the most natural idea will be to say birth order. Many parents, many Jewish parents who bless their children on Friday night will naturally do it in birth order. There are ideas that the first child is more important, but even without that, it seems to make logical sense. it seems the idea that is least likely to cause trouble, except, of course, in my house, where my three sons got upset about the order being the same every week, and we've invented very, very many different elaborate ways to bless them so that each child seems fair. The same thing happened in terms of the naming of the stones. If we look at Shmot 28:10, which is not speaking about the breastplate, but about the Urim and Tumim, which were kept inside the breastplate, special stones that were kept inside this the breastplate, we read, Shisha mishmotam ala evena echat, ve shmot ha-shisha notarim ala evena shenit ketol dotam. There shall be six names on one stone, and the remaining six names on the second stone, inscribed in the order of their birth. And Rashi, picking up on this, says, Keseder toldotam seder ha'avanim, according to the order of their births, shall be the order of the stones. Rashi says that what applied for the Urim v'Tumim, which is written clearly in the Torah, that it should be in birth order, what applies for the Urim and Tumim applies to the breastplate as well. So he says it needs to be in order of birth. And I would like to claim that this is a biological definition of Judaism. I'm Jewish because I was born. I'm Jewish because I was born Jewish. There's something about purely going according to when you were born that seems to me to go maybe, if not race, at least ethnic or genetic, a genetic definition of what it means to be Jewish. What is important is my birth. So that's one level, one idea of what it means to be Jewish. In Bereishit 35, verses 22 to 26, we have another naming of the children of Jacob, of the children of Israel. It's also in birth order, but it is in birth order in a different way, and that is according to their mothers, Leah, Rachel, the wives of Yaakov, and Zilpah and Bilhah, his maidservants, their shivchot, who then their maidservants, who had children with Yaakov. So it's still birth order, but now it's birth order subdivided by the mothers, and the Chizkuni picks up on this and says, Yesh mefarshim keseder toldotam, haynu keseder leidata imahot, Lea, Bilha, Zilpa, Rachel. There are those that interpret the order of their births as the order of the giving birth of the mothers Leah, Bilhah, Zilpah, and Rachel. What we have over here, I think, is a different definition of what it means to be a Jew. Here we're going according to the mothers, and I think here we have something familial. Who are the Jews? The Jews are a family. We're defined by our parents. Whereas the first explanation was genetic, this one tempers it a little bit, and here we are defined by our family. And in many, many ways, this is a good way to think of the Jewish people. Families have their goodies and their baddies. They have their internal ideals. They have people who don't keep to the rules of the family, but they're still members of the family. Families change over time as the Jewish religion and the Jewish people have changed over time. If we think of the connections that Jews have with each other, they very, very often are familial. I know that one of my favorite cartoons contains two women walking out of work. The one has just discovered that the other was Jewish, and she says, oh my goodness, I can't believe it, you'll be Jewish too, and I've been nice to you all these years. There's a certain feeling amongst many Jews that we're in the inside. We can be a little nasty to each other because we're family. We understand each other. In Shmot 1:1, the very first pasuk in Sefer Shmot, we have yet another list, which some rabbis say was the order that was used on the breastplate. Ve'ele Shmot b'nei Yisrael haba'im mitzrayim et Yaakov Ish uveto ba'u. These are the names of Israel's sons who came to Egypt with Jacob, each with his family. Here we have, I think, a third definition. And I would say that this is defining ourselves by how history treated us. In many ways, leaving Egypt to come to Eretz Israel at Joseph's request was a passive act. The children of Israel were hungry. Their brother Joseph had become prime minister of Egypt. They were called. Circumstances acted upon them in such a way that they decided to leave Eretz Israel, they decided to leave Israel and come and live in Mitzrayim. And I would say that this is a definition of Judaism that sees us as having a common history, but a common passive history, and very, very often a common negative history. I put in these categories Jews who see the Holocaust, the Shoah, as being a very important part of their identity. Jews who the primary definition of their Jewish identity is fighting anti-Semitism or looking out for Jews who are in need anywhere in the world. So we have a genetic biological definition, we have a familial definition, and we now have a historical definition. A similarly historical definition is found in the second pasuk of Bamidbar Bet, where we read, Ish al diglo ba'otot levet avotam yachanu bnei Yisrael, mineged saviv lo'ohel moed yachanu. They are talking about the way, the order, that Am Yisrael would travel in the desert. The Israelites shall camp with each person near the banner having his paternal family's insignia. They shall camp at a specified distance around the communion tent. They're talking about the order that the tribes of Israel were gathered around the Ohel and the order in which they marched towards Eretz Israel. This too is a historical definition, but here the historical definition is one of acting upon history through listening to God, rather than being passive in history. This is the definition of being a Jew, which defines us as people who act upon history. Heschel said that we Jews are God's stake in human history. I think Prager and Telushkin, in their famous book, The Seven Questions People Ask About Judaism, define Judaism as the Jews' way to perfect the world. In Bamidbar 2:2, we learn to define ourselves as people who act upon history and who change it. Four definitions: genetic, familial, passive historic, and active historic. Four definitions which, according to my professor in university, were once all one. There is the idea, in the words of Dover Beach by the British poet Matthew Arnold, that the sea of faith was once two, at the full and round earth's shore, lay like the folds of a bright girdle furled. Once upon a time, everything was clear, but nowadays they've become unpacked. Two very, very interesting examples of how what it means to be a Jew has become unpacked can be found, one in a book by Tzvi Zohar, and another in a discussion I once had with a very good liberal rabbi whom I respect very, very much. Let's look at these two examples, and then let's bring it back to our understanding of Jewish identity. Tzvi Zohar, full disclosure, is my wife's cousin, and he has written a wonderful book about conversion, which has just come out in English, in which he shows that in modern times there have been two very, very different approaches to conversion. There are some who say, I convert to the Jewish people, that I become part of the Jewish people, and because I'm part of the Jewish people, I then become obligated to observe the mitzvot, Whereas there are others who say, I convert to the Jewish religion, and as a result of me having converted to the Jewish religion, I then also become part of the Jewish people. Basing himself on ancient sources, he shows that when you come to convert, there are two different ideas in mind. One which says that peoplehood is the most important and religion flows out of it. The other that says religion is the most important and peoplehood flows out of it. And this can be seen as an example of the breakdown of a holistic Jewish identity. Another very, very interesting example, which I find really fascinating, is, as we know, and traditionalist Jews define one as Jewish if one's mother is Jewish, whereas many liberal Jews define oneself as Jewish if either of one's parents are Jewish. And I have a friend who is a liberal rabbi who feels very, very strongly that whether it's the father or the mother who is Jewish, unless appropriate public displays have been made of Jewishness while the child grows up, that person is not Jewish. In other words, if a person has a Jewish father, as long as they had a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah, they had a circumcision or a baby naming, they publicly declared they were Jewish, as long as that takes place, there is no need to convert. On the other hand, even if the child's mother is Jewish, if they grew up in a totally a-religious, a-Jewish home, a home in which Yahudut and Torah is absent, that person is required to convert. One has a strange situation where a liberal rabbi would insist on somebody converting who an Orthodox rabbi would not. Now, this is not just petty minutiae or a nod to the important issue of gender equality, but it really is a different definition of being Jewish. For the traditionalist rabbi, I am Jewish because of some type of biology. It's like the first example we gave, maybe the second. It's familial. It's genetic. I'm Jewish because I am Jewish. It's something that is part of me. It's something essential to me. Whereas for the liberal rabbi, it's perhaps closer to the later two examples where I'm Jewish because of how I behave, because of what I do, because of the effect that I have on history. What makes me Jewish is not that I am Jewish, but that I behave Jewish, that I identify Jewish. The definition of Jewish is existential. And so we see over here again the breakup of these traditional definitions. Whereas once upon a time they were one, now they become split. The thing is that I don't think this is true. Both this liberal rabbi and Svi Zohar will be able to show you many, many ancient precedents for their beliefs. If we look back at what we looked at today, at the different debates about how to order the stones, we saw four different opinions. We saw four different opinions, but one of them had to be chosen in the end. Which one was chosen, we do not know, but we do know that one of them had to be chosen. Even in temple times, there were different definitions, different ideas of what it might mean to be a Jew, and yet one of them had to be chosen for this situation above another. There's much to be learned from this. Perhaps we can say that different definitions come to the fore at different times. What is the most important definition for the breastplate, which was an instrument of judgment, may be different from the definition somewhere else. In other words, the lack of clarity, the fact that we don't actually know what was chosen, and what we read today is actually later people trying to understand history many, many years after the fact. The fact that we don't know the answer, this lack of clarity may be on purpose, because at different times, different definitions of Judaism become more important. I think it's a very important lesson not to have this idealized view of the past, that once upon a time everything about being Jewish was clear and one merely decided whether to follow or not, but to understand that the issues that bother us today bothered people historically as well. And so we can see in many, many ways that we are more consistent with our past than we imagine. The lack of clarity, the idea and the lack of clarity leads us to believe the Jewish identity has always been somewhat fluid. The idea that different definitions apply to different times remind us that the importance of a rich Jewish identity is the fact that it can be worked with and acted out and played with in different ways. And finally, the realization that we are more consistent with our past than we can imagine reminds us how much our historical heritage has to teach us about issues that we face today. Speaking of today, I find it rather fascinating that the place where we see might see a breastplate today is on a Torah scroll. In our wisdom, we've decided that the Torah acts as our priests, that today it is the books, the learning, the teachings of God mediated through the text, which tell us how to be Jewish. Within the Torah are contained all these different ideas, as we try to show today: biological, familial, passive historical, active historical. This is all found within the Torah, and we dress the Torah as a priest, as a way to say, I believe, yes, Jewish identity is complicated. Yes, very, very often difficult decisions need to be made. But also to remind us that maximalist Jewish identity, richness and fullness, is not only in Matthew Arnold's voice, once too at the full, but that now too, in our own way, in our modern world, the sea of faith is too at the full, and round earth's shore lies like the folds of a bright girdle furled.
Thank you, Rabbi Levin Cruz. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send your emails to podcast@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.